I want to begin by reading the text. If you're new here, we've been walking through the Sermon on the Mount, a very difficult sermon that Jesus preached to his disciples from Matthew chapter 5, verse 33 to begin with. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no, or anything more than this comes from evil." I just had this thought pop into my mind when he goes, you can't make a hair white or black, but that's not true in our day and age, is it? We can have all different kinds of colors. That's not what Jesus was referring to there. But let me just read you the first statement in some verses that we've looked at previously. 21, you have heard that it was said to those of old. Verse 27, you have heard that it was said. Verse 31, it was also said. And then we come to 33. You again have heard that it was said to those of old. Today is the fourth behavior, a specific behavior that Jesus addresses, and there's going to be two more after this, but he's teaching his disciples and that crowd that there's a new reality. And he looks at these, he's looking at these six behaviors, and he's going deeper with every behavior. A couple of weeks ago, we looked at anger and harsh words, and we looked at lust and adultery, and last Sunday, we looked at divorce and remarriage. But he's saying this, to live within the kingdom of heaven. He's inviting us to live differently than what the world, as the world understands things. But today, as disciples of Christ, I do believe this. Our lives should be different than what the world around us. Now, oftentimes I hear a phrase something like this when I ask, well, how are you sharing Christ the world? And people come back and say this, I'm just trying to live a life in front of the world. Now, that statement, I'm trying to be a witness for Christ. What does that really mean? That our lives are a witness for Christ. Growing up, I was taught this, to be different from the world. You cannot smoke, you cannot use alcohol, and you surely can't dance. That's what I was taught. Now there was things that came along that challenged me in my understanding of what righteousness was. And one of the things, as I was preparing the sermon earlier in the week, it was like there was this incident that came to my mind that I think so fits here. I think I was in sixth, seventh grade, somewhere in that vicinity of age. And our church in Cokato, where I grew up, they didn't have a parking lot. So we parked on the street. And our family, there were six kids in the family, and oftentimes we had to drive two cars, or you know, somebody was late and didn't get ready in time. But for whatever reason, we were parked way down the street. And that day, that Sunday, I was sitting out on the grass, kind of waiting for my parents to come. They were talking to somebody. And the speaker, there was a special speaker that day. He comes walking. He gave the sermon, and he comes walking down. His car was parked right behind us. And he gets in the car. He didn't have any wife. I don't know if he had kids or a wife. I'm not sure. But he gets in the car. He pulls out a cigarette, and he lights it up. So here I am at a young age watching this, and I go, wait a second, he just gave the sermon. Something is wrong here. I was horrified. I was scarred for life. I never attended church again. No, that's not true. Okay, but in my mind, you understand, I'd equated certain behaviors with what it meant to be righteous. And this guy pushed me. But thinking of that incident, there's really a deeper issue here. Because how do we define righteousness? And questions that go along with that. What really is spiritual maturity? What does it mean to have a transformed life? And maybe this, to live a life differently in front of the world as a follower of Christ. What does it really mean? See, Jesus here, he is inviting us, his disciples, this crowd, to a deeper understanding of what that means. And where he goes, he keeps going here, is folks, you know, he's saying, disciples, this is about the heart. We keep so functioning on the surface level, and he keeps wanting to take the disciples, and he wants to take us through this passage and go deeper. You know, and I think Jesus knew the people of that day that they were kind of like, I think I am sometimes, and other people, maybe this is you as well, is that oftentimes we want to show the good moral deeds and the righteousness of our lives on the outside, and on the inside, there might be something different. See, Jesus always connects the actions back to our hearts of why we do what we do. And in even verse 33, when it says, again, you have heard that it was said, you understand he's throwing a challenge. He's going, you guys are on a surface level, and he begins to dig and going, what really does this mean? Now, I was rolling this text over in my mind on Monday. I try to shut off my mind on the next sermon on Monday. I typically try to just take a mental break, but knowing that I had a lot going on, I started pondering it. And even in the evening, I dug in and read a couple commentaries on the text. And one of the commentaries on this passage was where the guy was using the King James Version of the Bible. And if you look at in the King James, you'll notice that King James uses the word swear almost through the whole text. They're swearing or swore an oath in that sense. Now, if you have the New American Standard, it actually doesn't even use the word swear, but it uses the word oath instead. ESV uses just the first one, and then it goes on, changes it to oath. But when we hear that word swear, if you were like me growing up, the word swear was different. Swearing was different than what Jesus is talking about here actually today. See, for me growing up, there was this word swearing that we were taught, and anything that you said bad was considered swearing in my home. And you understand, there were six of us kids growing up. And I suspect, well, I think my parents, listen to the King James verse 34. They might have quoted this. But I say unto you, swear not at all. They would have quoted that verse to me. So we were taught that any bad word spoken was considered swearing. Now, from time to time in our family, someone would take up the mantle of being the swearing policeman. So as one of the us kids, and we were all six kids in 6 years, and someone would come along, and I suspect that I did it as well. We took that mantle on our shoulders and said, don't swear. And then what we do, someone would swear, and you know what our motive was at that point? Turn them in. Go to mom and dad. Mom, Doug swore. Janet was swearing. And you go, really, what was my motive? Was it really to protect the name of God? It was get them in trouble. That was the reason why we were doing it. But see, this passage today really isn't about just swearing on the surface level. Or it's not even really about the flippant use of God's name. It's there, but it's deeper, okay? And I think that one of the commentaries, he really missed the point. It's not about ugly words or even taking an oath. That's really not the meaning that Jesus is trying to get and describe to the crowd. But understand, think of this picture. The people are sitting in front of Jesus, and they had a tendency which carries over all the way to 2014. And it's this. We believe that if we keep the letter of the law, the outward actions, if we obey the Ten Commandments, we can kind of pat ourselves in the back and we can feel pretty righteous and feel pretty good about ourselves. And it kind of follows through with siblings and naughty words. And you go, they're unrighteous when they say it. And then I can look at myself and just kind of go, boy, I'm pretty good. Good Christian. See, the challenge is we can create an ethic system that really is based on just keeping the letter of the law. And then we work hard at avoiding looking within, avoiding looking at our hearts. You know, when I tell on my siblings, I don't think I had really any pure motives when I would do that. But Jesus catches, he's not holding things back here from this crowd or from us. And you, I think you feel the weight of the sermon, even how it's so confrontive. And Jesus is so bold, and he goes after the religious elite, and he's going after the hearts of these people, and he's stripping really the phoniness away of their lives. And in the actions that they're doing on the outside, he's saying, guys, think about something beyond just the outward. So what's Jesus teaching us here today? And here's where we got to drill a little bit. That first phrase, you've heard that it was said. I really believe that he was referring back to Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. Now, I won't put it on the screen, but it says this, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And they would have known that. But he's saying that is the surface issue. See, I think this, the religious leaders of that day, the people of that day, they understood that taking God's name in vain in a flippant way was wrong. They believed that. And I think that's true even to some extent for many people today. Maybe it's growing less and less. But we understand by connecting the word God to something, the weight, there's a weight to it. Think of this phrase here. I swear to God that it's the truth. Why do we use the word God there? You ever thought of that? Why do people throw in that term? I don't know if they still do it in court. On TV, at least, they do this. They go into the court and they put their hands in the Bible, and what do they do? I swear to tell the truth, the whole nothing, truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. They still do that? Anybody want to admit that they've been in court recently? See, we know that if God's name is used, there's a weight to it in terms of truthfulness and trustworthiness. Now think back as a kid. Do you remember doing this, cross my heart and hope to die? You ever do that? What was it there for? It was to convince that other kid that we were dealing with that we're not kidding, that it's true. But now catch this. I don't know if kids still do this today. I'm going to cross my fingers. I'm going to put it behind my back. Do you know what that means at that point? It means that what we're saying might be false. And we're kind of appearing to the other person that we're looking to get away with something. Well, catch this. This is the essence of what's going on here in this text. It's to convince people that I'm true and righteous. And all along, I have a finger behind my back. Let me give you a reminder in the notes if you're using the sermon outline there. I want to fill that in for you. The flesh, the heart, the old self, that which we learn, invites us. It's kind of calling to our minds, and we use deception to make ourselves appear righteous. See, it's easy to want people to look at us and go, I want them to make me appear. I need to appear good before them. But something was wrong in the ethics system. Now, let me just define an oath here and just kind of deal with that and a swearing here. I understand that as they looked at swearing in an oath, a promise, in making a statement and including God as a witness, the people of that day believed that it was very, very important when they included God. And why? If I broke an oath that invoked the name of God, a curse could come down on you. God could send his wrath in dealing with you that you have somehow violated that sacred oath. See, invoking God's name was serious business, and the people of that day knew it. And they didn't want to get cursed by God. So not wanting God to be angry, not wanting him to send his wrath, here's what they did. They swore and took oaths on other things other than God, knowing all along that if they needed to break the oath, it wasn't that bad. Now, I don't have it on the screen, but if you look at the text, the end of 34 and 35, so what they did, rather than invoking God's name, they would swear by heaven and the skies and the stars out there. And then they would swear by the earth. And then they would invoke by Jerusalem, I swear to you that it's true. Or by their head, they would swear and take a vow. See, the expressions of truth or the promises, though, here's the deal, was given, in one sense, with their fingers crossed behind their back, knowing that if it needed to be broken, it was okay. And Jesus basically says this, stop, wait a minute. Who made the heavens? Who made the earth? Isn't the earth the footstool of who? God? The great city of Jerusalem, you'll notice that in the verse there, has a king. Who's the king? And then who created the black hair and the blonde hair and the no hair? Some of you have put that in with me. You understand? That's God. See, he's going after them for their flippancy of actually trying to avoid using God, but he's saying, you guys are just trying to get around it, and you're actually being deceptive. You're really being deceptive. You're crossing your fingers and putting them behind your backs. See, what happens here is that people, we don't like to look at the motives of why we do what we do. And Jesus is going after their hearts. And he's telling them that you're trying to create an image of righteousness. And in their eyes, I understand technically, they weren't using or abusing God's name and taking it in vain. And in their eyes, that deception was okay. But look at the phrase in verse 37. He drills down right into their hearts. And then he states this, let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Some versions that you might have the word from the devil. See, he's going after their hearts. He's saying, people, look at the inconsistency of your lives. And you might, he's saying, you might want to recheck your real motives. Well, let me give you the application of what Jesus is doing here. For us, how it applies to us today. If you're taking notes there, I said this. God wants us to speak words and to live lives that are filled with integrity. The words that flow out of our mouths are to be filled with integrity. And these people in that day had manipulated the system to look good on the outside, and the inside did not matter. They had no integrity. And for us, the reality is, God knows already our hearts. He knows the motives of why we say what we say and why we do it what we do. But he's challenging his disciples, guys, it's the heart is the issue. You can create an outside righteousness, and it doesn't mean anything unless the heart is also there. Last week, every day I've been getting political ads. And so we're in that season where we're headed toward the election. And I go, somewhere along the line, I'll say boldly, I'm tired of politics and wonder if there's any integrity left in the area. Especially on the state and national level, I go, everybody's taking words out of context to drill home and to cut and attack the other person. And I feel like I'm voting for the lesser of two evils at times. And I go, is integrity gone there? But here's the application for us. It really is the issue of integrity. See, do you catch the weight of that phrase? Let what you say be simply yes or no. And I'm not sure that we understand the scope of that issue, practically speaking. See, if we're going to live lives differently than the world is, this issue of integrity is absolutely core. And I have to admit that even things creep into my heart where selfishness comes in, and it can move me to a place where I want to create an image. But let me apply this here a bit. Because here's again, I think, what's so easy to do. We look at the big things, like our marriage and other decisions, and we say, I'm going to commit to it. And then we go to little decisions that we have to make every day. And you go, is our yes a yes and a no, no in those little things? Do the little things not matter, but the big ones do? Is that how we live our lives? You see, even we make an appointment with somebody, and we show up 20, 30, 40 minutes late, and we don't call them, and all of a sudden, it really doesn't matter. Have we stopped and said, in that little decision, that we're wasting somebody else's time? And we've never called or, I recognize things come up. In little things, doesn't matter. Brushing off the verbal commitments. That is about integrity. Not caring about those little commitments ultimately reveals the selfishness within our hearts. See, faithfulness and integrity are deeply connected. Over the years, I'll be blunt with this, over the years of doing ministry, the number of people who sign up in churches and they don't call and they just brush off a commitment because something better came up at the last minute, and they don't, there's no sense of guilt. Folks, that speaks to the integrity within people's hearts. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. But when we serve in an area, the faithfulness to a ministry, to a class, to a community group, to a church. See, the reality is people jump from church to church because they have a better program. But do you know what that says? Is that the program matters more than people. When we're so quick to do that. But think of all of the commitments that are made in the family, in the church, leadership commitments. Let our yes be yes and our no, no. Integrity is the name of the game here. Deanna struggles when people call in sick at her work. She's has lots of people under her, and they call in and, you know, they say they're sick. And get this, then they'll post it on Facebook later what they really did. And you go, what? Now, turn with your Bibles to Psalm 15. See, here's the challenge for a follower of Christ. our lives are supposed to be not normal, abnormal, different in a fallen world. Do people view us with that kind of integrity where our yes is yes and our no, no? Deanna and lots of other people in the work world have said this, is that when Christians come into the work world, their integrity is no different at times than anybody. And others don't call themselves Christ, but there's no difference. But here's where I need to drill down. I want to use Psalm 15, because Psalm 15 gives some very pointed issues surrounding integrity and really what it is. So I want to just walk through this real quickly. But Psalm 15, look how it goes, verse 1. I don't have it on the screen, so you need to follow it in a Bible or in the insert there. O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell on your holy hill? Now he begins with a question. David writes this. And who is it that's abiding and living in the presence of God? Now recognize this isn't about salvation. That question isn't about whether one is saved or not saved. This is about John 15, abiding in Christ. This is about living within the kingdom of heaven. But David now goes on and he lists 10 qualities, 10 characteristics of who are those that are going to abide in God's tent, who's going to dwell in his holy hill. Now look at verse 2. The first phrase, he who walks blamelessly will abide with God. Now, I said it this way, number one, kind of a principle. Other people recognize integrity. That word blameless implies this, that other people are watching us. And they're coming to a conclusion that respect should be given. See, this is an observation of people, that one is blameless. Now, that word doesn't mean that you're sinless. That's not what it's implying there. But blameless literally means wholeness. It means sound. So when people, for example, an application there, when I sin against someone else, if I'm blameless, I need to do the right thing, and I need to go to them and say, would you forgive me? See, that's being blameless, and then the reputation then develops, and people look at you as blameless. But look at the next phrase, and does what is right. Another quality of our lives. And I said number two, I had to quote, because I think it's so direct, one does what is right. Righteousness comes from the root word of right. We do what's right. Our actions are what God wants. And there's a consistency here as well. You think of the three different environments. We have the church world, we have the work world, we got our home world. You probably add a friend's world beyond that as well. But is there consistency? Do we do what's right here and the same thing here and here? And here's the challenge. We can come to church like we come today and we can create an image. But does that rightness, doing what's right, when we go home, is that same reputation, would my wife and my kids observe that and say, I'm going to give Dad respect? And then you go into the work world and you go, are they going to do what's right? Now, it's interesting in that culture, this was so important, especially in the work world. Proverbs 11:1 says this, the Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find favor with him. That word detest is a very strong word. And in the business sense, God, he really despises merchants who cheat their customers and take advantage of them. And then they can look good in another world. You see, that's integrity. Look at the next phrase, and speaks truth in his heart. The New Living says this, speaking the truth from sincere hearts. See, this is about our tongues and our speech that have godly motives. I said it this way, number three, integrity calls us to speak words for righteousness' sake. The opposite of that, of righteousness, really is manipulation. See, the Pharisees were manipulating by putting their fingers behind their back to take advantage in some way. It was a form of deception. And I think this is true when people try to sell us something or you go into a store and you know that they're schmoozing you just to get the sale. It bugs me. But integrity doesn't use flattery to get ahead. Integrity says we speak words for righteousness' sake. Look at the next phrase, who does not slander with his tongue. Another aspect that comes out really from our mouths. And number four, I said it this way, integrity invites us to speak words of life rather than death. That word slander, it literally means to spy out, to go spy. And what we're looking at other people for what's the worst in them. How to put them down. How to, make us feel better and they're less. And the question would come back, do we have a reputation for running people down or for building people up with our words? See, that's integrity. Next phrase, and does no evil to his neighbor. See, I said it this way, integrity builds relationships with one's neighbor. The opposite, trying to dish our neighbors versus build them up. See, that's an integrity issue. Do we want to live in the world in front of the world? It really probably includes our neighbors, literal neighbors, people that bump into us. Are we becoming a good neighbor? Scott and Michelle Schwatke had a neighborhood party last Sunday night. They were inviting people over, and Deanna and I are part of their community group, so we offered to just help set up. So we stayed a little bit to meet some of their neighbors. Michelle shared with me a day or two later, she said, yeah, that the next day people drove by and waved for the first time. Before, they weren't waving, but because Scott and Michelle tried to build a relationship with them to encourage them, guess what? They were respecting that back. But maybe we live lives that look to isolate ourselves from people, you know, put a do not disturb around our homes and our lives. Is that us? Or we may be looking at our neighbors and looking for all their faults and putting them down rather than ministering. See, what does it mean to live our lives in front of people day by day, even in our neighborhoods? Look at the next phrase, nor takes up a reproach against his friend. I said it this way, number six, integrity doesn't hold a grudge. See, friends come and challenge us. Are we quickly offended? Do we get that friendships might need to say hard things to our lives? See, the opposite of integrity is to judge their motives and withdraw from them and kind of go, they were my friends. See, integrity goes, no, we don't hold a grudge. Look at the next one in four. In whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. Now, what is this character quality? Does it mean we hate? Think of it, number seven, I'll fill it in here for you. Integrity looks to give respect to those whose lives exhibit godly character. See, I think there's a challenge in our culture. This word vile, it means reprobate. But we have a culture where people who are flat out evil and their hearts are hardened, and we lift at times, those people are lifted up in the world as a model. And then people who call themselves Christians sometimes admire those people. And you go, why? There might be Hollywood people, sports people. See, where do we give our admiration? See, David is saying, if you want to sit in the presence of God, look to people as models that exhibit godly character. Avoid those giving an emphasis and legitimizing their behavior. The next phrase, who swears to his own hurt and does not change. The NIV says it this way, he keeps his oath even when it hurts. You make a promise and you keep it even if it hurts. Defined it this way, integrity is willing to forfeit time, energy, and even money because it's the right thing to do. See, let our yes be yes and our no, no. Our words count. It's important to this issue of how we live our lives in front of people. But the hard part, and I've said this for a number of years, how consumerism comes into the church. And we have, consumerism basically is this, you have more choices. There's a whole buffet of choices that you can make. And you go along and I've made this choice, I said yes to this, but something a little better comes around. What do we do? Do we let our yes be yes and our no, no? See, integrity isn't convenient. Do you catch that? It's just not convenient. It's hard. Next phrase. Who does not put out his money at interest. What's he talking about as a quality here? Number 9, I said it this way. Integrity values compassion over profit. See, the Old Testament speaks over and over again of people who exploit the poor. Now, I understand the purpose of loans in our day is to make money and develop and expand. But for Israel, if you borrow, you know, you had to lend some money to somebody else, a neighbor, whatever, by putting interest on it, you are actually increasing their burden. Do you see the standard, what they were after, Jesus was after? What David is writing about here. Don't make it harder for those that are already struggling. See, if we charge interest and put that burden, you're just driving them into more debt. Next phrase, last one. And does not take a bribe against the innocent. I said this from the positive side, integrity chooses humility over winning and honor. Deuteronomy 16 gives a scenario where it basically says that those that have money have the ability to win over poor people. And I think you see that today. And they have the ability to bribe judges and to get their way by using their wealth and their power. They could overpower the innocent. They were exploiting the poor. See, and integrity says this, no matter what, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to humble myself. I'm going to be willing to even to pay the consequences if I've done something wrong. And put away the need to win and to turn things into a competition and prove and just overpower the other person. That way never works. And it's the opposite of integrity. But let me just close with the last verse there in verse 5. Look how it reads, he who does these things, these 10 things, shall never be moved. Now, what's that saying? I believe it's this. You're going to stay in the presence of God. There's a place where you live within the kingdom as that those pieces, those 10 values that need to be a part of our lives, we live and we begin to live on the hill of God. We find a relationship with God. The stuff, meaning and stuff goes away. And possessions, it's not important. But sojourning with God is what we learn to value. And folks, when we're at that place, integrity comes to our hearts, our minds, and our lives. And isn't that a much better place to be? So we let our hearts say yes or no. And we commit to the kingdom. And God says, Ken, all of us here, live with integrity and come into my presence. See, I'm convinced this. How do you, if our lives are filled with integrity, how do you live in the presence of God? That's the tension. And he's again, David's going, no, when we do those things, we come into the presence of God and he satisfies us. And what happens? He changes our hearts. He changes us from the inside out. And we live lives that are different from the world. Different from the world. And that becomes the norm of our lives. And people say, boy, you're different. You go, yeah, that's because I'm in the presence of God. It's not trying to create righteousness. It's living with God. Let's stand and let's pray.